All right, welcome back to this week's edition of the Rock and Roll Ghost Podcast. We're talking with actor Amy Landecker, who's on the new season of Your Honor. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. So this
are
is
you the, in Chicago?
Yeah.
Hometown.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of hometown people will say this, but I remember listening to your dad on the radio, so...
Yes, if, I guess at this point I'm offended if you don't say that.
Yeah. I think you were primarily a theater person for the longest time, but like I knew about you. I don't remember if were you on like the Steve Dahl show?
Oh my God, when I was a kid, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All the time.
Yeah. Because I remember him talking about. At some point talking about you. And I used to listen to him.
I got into like a fight with Marcus. I think that was the guy's name.
Oh, wow. That was way back.
Oh, yeah.
That's the disco demolition days.
I didn't get into a fight. I'll tell you, it's interesting because I was pissed because here's a piece of radio history that my dad might not want me to share anymore because it's become sort of controversial. But when I was growing up, what I was told, I'm not saying this is true, I don't know historically, but my dad said disco sucks on WLS radio and WLS did not want him to say the word sucks. So Steve Dahl heard it. This is what I was, what I understood, mm-hmm. took it, ran with it and became like wildly famous off of that term. And I like yelled, I went downstairs like this little, cause it was the studios were downstairs and I like yelled something like I was like 8 years old or something and yelled like through the glass, like my dad said it first or something like that. Anyway, Marcus was actually very sweet to me. I don't think we fought, but it was like, so I was getting upset about that. And that's all I remember from my childhood.
You must've picked up on your dad must've been maybe a little irritated.
It was really hard. Although now what's interesting is if you watch the Bee Gees documentary, that whole sort of movement of like destroying all that music is now seen in a very different historical
context. Oh yeah. It's weird because I remember I was listening to that show way too young, probably a little younger than you are perhaps, or maybe we're about the same age. And I've seen that revisionist history and I never thought, and not to get too far off track here, but I never thought that Steve was racist in any way about it. I just thought that
I didn't think Steve was. I think that the movement might have been Comiskey turned into something that now in retrospect looks racist. But I don't know if that was the intent of anyone at the time. It just now in historical perspective, I think it does.
But I think at the time it's like the culture really was. And it was more, I don't even think it was like that it was anybody that was, you know, a sexuality thing or a color thing. I think it was more that he was taking aim at white people kind of just all of a sudden acting like they're disco.
I think he also genuinely hated the music, which to be honest with you, I never respected the Bee Gees as much as I did until after I watched that documentary, because I sort of hated most of the Bee Gees sound. And then it was like, oh, they're geniuses. It was just different because it was more synthesized and we were very freaked out about that at the time, you know. But now that's like so common and you realize their musicianship in retrospect. But anyway,
well, there's their older stuff, the stuff that they were doing before, like, then is also really holds up well. But
yeah, I agree.
Even aside from them, there were so many artists that were not the Bee Gees that were doing, in retrospect, were doing some cool stuff, but there was like, you know, so like the Leo Sayers and that
right,
kind
the stuff
of thing.
That like wasn't cool, but then you're like, oh, it's really good music. I'll probably think Celine Dion is great in like 10 years.
Yeah. See, that's what happens when you grow up with a DJ for a father, that you have very passionate opinions about
music. Oh, yes. Yes, you do. Yes.
All right. Well, our little trip down memory lane. So you were just like in my sphere of knowledge for some reason, but I don't think I had I don't know. I'm like looking. I think the first thing I definitely remember seeing you in, and it's a personal favorite of mine, is A Serious Man.
As the that's like the first. Neighbor. That's the first real thing I ever did. I had like, I mean, I'd done a couple of Law and Orders, and I had done, you know, a couple of guest stars on some TV stuff. And I think like the only movie I'd ever done, I mean, I had like, I was like, you know, had one line as a reporter or something in something, or I was the first like movie I ever had anything really to say or do was one scene in a movie called Dan in Real Life. But the first movie that I actually had like a character to play was definitely A Serious Man. And part of that was because I grew, you know, I didn't leave Chicago until pretty late. I was a theater actor and a voiceover actor and very content, and a commercial actor and content to do that. I just ended up doing a play that took me to New York, that took me to LA. And while I was out in LA, which was a Tracy Letts play, who's a Chicago guy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And while I was out in LA, they were doing a casting for that movie. And I just happened to know the casting director from Chicago. Her name was Rachel Tenner. And I just happened to be able to go like, hey, Rachel, I happen to be in LA. I saw this casting call, you know, that someone actually sent me an email that my friend Andrew Hawks, who was a Chicago actor, he was like, hey, Amy, I saw this casting. This is you. And I was so flattered because it said nudity was required. And I was like, ew, who wants to see me naked? He's like, shut up. So I was like, okay, I'll, you know, I would never think of myself for that. But I was like, well, and I honestly, I'm not trying to be self-deprecating, but she was described as really sexy. I didn't think of myself like that. I didn't think of myself like that at all. And here's this lovely old boyfriend who thought this was perfect for me. And I just thought, well, I'll just go say hi to Rachel Tenner in LA. Never in a million years ever did I think I was going to get that part. It still blows my mind. I mean, it just wasn't even in my realm of reality that I would get in a Coen Brothers movie that I would be cast as like a naked sex person. Yeah. I was like, wait, what? It never even occurred to me. And it was so weird when she's like, you have a callback with the Coen Brothers. And I was like, you know, I don't know. It was just so weird. I had some take on it that they wanted, and I got the job, proceeded to like starve myself, you know, and like work out every day and try to like feel confident. Although I was lying down, it was no big deal, but, that had nothing to do with why they were casting me. That was all, you know, but of course that's the only part I was so scared of, but, but it was so fun, you know. Sorry to talk so much, but
you're on here to talk. So
just that Michael Stuhlbarg and I, you know, we've gone on a journey together. That was his first big movie, and we became extremely good friends during the shooting of that. And you know, it just looking at Your Honor behind you, it's just, we talk about it all the time. We were just together shooting.
That's right. I completely forget that he's on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't watched a ton of it yet. I was waiting to see if there was going to be a second season. And then once I heard there was one.
You like to watch it all together.
I kind of wanted to, you know, make sure that like it didn't tell half of a story.
Yeah. Well, it was intended to be a limited series, so it does hold up as its own. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been like, "How do you even go on from that?" But they did. Yeah. Hopefully, people will enjoy where it did. But Michael and I have done four projects. We did that, and then we both got cast in Doctor Strange, which I am you wouldn't even know I was in it.
Oh, well, the first one.
Yeah. And I didn't know why they hired me, because you wouldn't know I was in it. I was in medical garb. And it turns out the whole reason I was in it is because the director loved A Serious Man and wanted me and Michael in the same scene. And Michael was a surgeon, and I was I was an anesthesiologist. So
yeah, Scott Derrickson, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's his favorite movie. It's his favorite scene in films or something. That scene.
Wow.
I know. It's a pretty. I mean, they paid a pretty penny to bring me as basically background to come out to London for a month. Yeah. I was like, anyone could have done this. Why am I here?
It's a shame you weren't up for the lead role. You could have got some good Marvel money.
Yeah, no kidding. And then he came on Transparent, which was my big break in TV. And right. then And then now we do Your Honor together. So all roads, I always say, lead back to A Serious Man, but it changed my whole, I was not a mainly on camera actor. And I certainly thought that those years were probably more behind me than in front of me. But I'm the weird, you know, actress who started a career, really an on-camera career at the age of 40, which is like usually when people are sent out to die. I had this weird career turn where not only did I start doing on camera, but I started doing comedy, which I was never associated with because of that. And that just kind of led to, you know, a bunch of cool stuff. But the first time I met Brian, which is how I got Your Honor, was Sneaky Pete, which was sort of the bridge between comedy and drama, I would say.
That was something that Brian produced.
Yeah, right? He produced it. He was in the first season, and I did like a recurring, and we had a really nice. He's been supportive of me, which is nice.
Yeah, no, it's cool. And you got the show now.
Yeah.
A Serious Man is it's weird when you think of somebody like the Coen brothers or Scorsese or anybody like that who's done a ton of films, and like you know you the big ones, like, you know, trying to pick a Coen brothers movie out of the thin air for somebody like Big Lebowski or something like that,
Fargo,
you know, Fargo, yeah. Right, those are the ones that get mentioned a lot. Nobody really talks about, like, you know, a serious man or say Inside Llewyn Davis or something like that. There are more offbeat stuff, but I think I saw A Serious Man with my son, and I remember I just took to it instantly. And it's got that scene with Michael yelling at the guy from Columbia House about Santana's Abraxas. My son even bought me a vinyl copy of Santana's
Abraxas. Oh my God, that's hysterical.
As a gag.
That's hysterical. No, that movie holds up so well. My husband had not seen it and watched it during COVID. And he was just like, because a lot of people haven't seen it. A lot of people haven't heard of it. It's luckily for me, career-wise, it's certainly beloved amongst filmmakers.
And right. That's the key thing for acting.
Yes, I got plenty from it because people were so into it. It's, you know, it's a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
It's just very small and weird, and it doesn't, you know, they have like two genres, the Coen brothers. They have like their big, you know, kind of lots of action and these really weird little psychodramas. And this is definitely one of the weirder ones, but when he's trying to argue with that guy, and I mean, it's just, it's that type of stuff where the first time you might think it's funny, but it gets funnier and funnier and funnier the more you watch it.
Yeah. Well, you have that, your character is married to the idiot, the hunting idiot, right?
I'm his neighbor.
Thought that was the one, I thought you were married to the,
I don't, I never saw my husband. I just know my husband's never home, but the hunting guy with that kid.
I see, it's been a while since I've seen the movie, so I'm transposing people.
That's all right. We're next door neighbors.
But
it's not my husband.
He's up on the roof. That's when he catches you.
He's trying to fix the antenna.
Yeah.
I'm sunbathing nude. And I remember being so self-conscious about being naked. I was so freaked out about it. And, you know, we finished the scene and I said to Ethan Coen, I was like, how did that look? He goes, oh, it was so funny. It was so funny. Yeah. And I remember being like, funny. Like all I wanted to hear was like, you look great. But it was now in retrospect, what a sweet, innocent, beautiful thing to say to an actor instead of
some leering jerk.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, no, it was really funny. Yeah. I just confirmed Serious Man trivia through Gene Black, who is my makeup artist, who's Brad Pitt's personal makeup artist.
Oh, wow.
So Julia Roberts' personal makeup artist. So I was actually working with Julia Roberts very briefly on a show called Gaslit. And and Gene was there and goes like, Amy Landecker, what are you doing? Oh my God. And Julie's like, how do you know each other? And she's like, we did A Serious Man together, like, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm surprised you remember me. She's like, oh, of course I remember. Like, I mean, it was, you know, it was such a great character, but also like the most makeup she ever got to put on a woman in a Coen Brothers movie. Cause I had like all these, this very like big black eyeliner and a really, anyway, I asked her, is it true that my Merkin, which is a wig for the pubis, as was it made from Brad Pitt's beard from another film? And in fact, it was, it to confirm.
Oh my God. that's bizarre and hilarious at the same time.
And I was like, damn, I should have saved it.
Yeah, yeah. At least it wasn't his Merkin.
You know, they offered me to save it. And I thought, oh, that's disgusting. Why would I save
it's
it?
It's a little weird, yeah.
Kill for it now, though.
Yeah, I would, you would have had his DNA.
And I would have this ridiculous memory.
It would be like on a, just like sitting on some sort of thing inside a glass display case.
Trying to explain.
Yeah. This is what I wore to cover up.
This is my costume.
I wore Brad Pitt's beard.
I am Brad Pitt's beard.
Oh man, that's funny. I love that movie. And I noticed that you're in that movie Missing that's coming up.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know about till today. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I didn't know a lot about a movie called Searching, which was right. I guess big hit for it was at Sundance and engrossed quite a bit of money and was really cool and creative. It's all this found footage stuff. And I had never seen it or heard of it, but my agent said that I was getting this offer to do the sequel that was originally called what was the first one?
Searching. So the sequel is going to be Searching to Electric Boogaloo.
It was going to be Searching too. And then I think they realized that even though Searching One was a hit, it's maybe not the, I don't know. I don't know why they changed the name, but now it's called Missing. And it's same idea where you have this, and I'd done another found footage movie a long time ago. I forget the name of it, but that was like somewhat successful at it. But Searching was really smart. Like you actually got really into it and it worked, even though there was only through like cell phones and security cameras and FaceTime. And so it's like, it's a definite sort of, you know, like tricky, whatever that word is when you have like a gimmicky kind of idea if it's not done right. But I feel like these guys really know how to do this. And it's just a murder mystery, basically done through found footage, and Storm Reid is the lead. And I am her mom's, Nia Long plays her mom. Her mom is missing and I am her mom's best friend. So,
okay.
Yeah. What's also cool about that though, is Tim Griffin, who's a Chicago actor, is in it as well. And him and I went to Francis W. Parker High School, which is a very small school in Lincoln Park of Chicago. And we passed each other in the hall at the fittings. And I was like, Tim, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm in this movie. I was like, I'm in this movie too. So we had a little high school reunion. So
that's cool.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. The premiere's on Thursday. I'm going to go here in LA.
Oh, nice. Nice. Do you know, are there a lot of people from that you knew from here out that way?
Yes, my class alone, we just had a huge loss. Anne H was in our class. We were a class of like 60 kids and four of us were actors out here in LA and all making a living, which is, you know, in and of itself impossible.
Yeah,
But Paul Adelstein, Tim Griffin, and Anne and I were all in the same grade. We're all still kind of freaked out and devastated. It's surreal to me. I did a ton of theater with her in high school and we all did and kept in touch through the years and just didn't expect that at all. We had Billy Zane was at our school. Gene Siskel, the great film critic, came and interviewed our theater class because we were not a performing arts school. We had Daryl Hannah, Jennifer Beals, David Mamet, he came out to interview because he was trying to figure out like why this little school in the middle of Chicago that wasn't even performing arts was turning out all these actors. We don't really know. It was just sort of weird.
Something in the water.
I mean, they had a really good theater department, and we were near Steppenwolf Theater, which was a great ground. I mean, that's where I got introduced to like the idea of theater acting, which I did for a very long time. And that was like my passion. And that was definitely watching, you know, Rondi Reed and William Peterson doing Fool for Love at Steppenwolf blew my mind. You know, Sam Shepard started a theater company with my sister. Paul was in a theater company. You know, Chicago actors take theater very, very seriously. And if you are a really good theater actor, you can transfer that. Like a lot of people come out here, they don't know what they're doing, you know? So Paul would always say to me, like, talent will get you somewhere in LA, because a lot of people don't, I mean, not that I'm like saying I'm not talented, but just that you even like really care about it and have done it and have worked at your craft in any way. A lot of people just come out because they just like kind of want to be famous, which is fine. It's just that's it's so much harder than just that, you know, unless you're Kim Kardashian.
It's pretty cool actually that there were some, I didn't realize that all those people were from the same school. That's weird. Really neat.
We talk about it a lot. And that's why when Tim and I were in the same movie all those years later, it was wild. We had our high school reunion like 2 months after in Chicago, and we were there. And it was just like, it's just who, you can't write that. It's just very weird.
Well, the main reason for talking to you today is Your Honor, where you star in it with Bryan Cranston and Michael Stuhlbarg. What led you to this role?
It's funny. I'd come off of Transparent, which was like a really comedy, more comedy. I mean, it had dramatic elements, but it was, you know, this wild character, who was like super, you know, I was always high and sort of sexually curious, and I didn't want to get typecast. I mean, people really believe you are what you play. I mean, people would come up and say the most inappropriate stuff to me if they were drunk. I was like, no, I'm just like a mom from, you know, Pasadena. I'm not Sarah Pfefferman. Yeah. And so when I got offered this show, I was just really interested in taking a 180 on a series where, you know, I could show a totally different side of myself. And it was so cool because I was like working in the background one day for quite a while. I mean, she was like next to me in this scene in the courthouse, and, you know, I have my hair in a ponytail and I'm very sort of like not done up and very straightforward. And, somehow she was like, why do you look so familiar? And I was like, I don't know. I was on the show Transparent. She's like, I watched Transparent. What were you in Transparent? I was like, I was Sarah the dog. She was just like, couldn't believe it. Like, she was like, I can't believe it's the same person. And I was like, good. That's good. That's what I want.
Yeah.
So that was one element of it. I had watched like some really great FBI stuff with Olivia Colman on an English show. I feel like it was called Broadchurch. And then
sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just got interested in the idea of like doing an FBI person that wasn't done in the vein of like Law and Order, like in a really arty kind of cool, complex sort of show. And I knew with Brian, the other thing of course is Brian, who is, I just think he truly is, he's just one of the best actors I'll ever work with in my life. I have no doubt about it. And, it was such a thrill to think that I would be in his presence. And it was Michael Stuhlbarg and Hope Davis, you know, Isaiah Whitlock. I mean, there was the first year cast, Margot Martindale. It was insane.
Yeah.
And, and it was shooting in New Orleans, which just sounded like a blast.
If I were an actor, I would definitely take a role in New Orleans.
It was the greatest city I've ever worked in. I got to do a movie there like the year before this called Project Power. So I got to spend like the last 3 years in New Orleans for at least a month a year. And it was unbelievable. But so basically, and also the director of the pilot, I did not know his work. I was, basically the director of the first episode, of a television series sets the tone for the whole season. So they're, right. they're very much the auteur of the mood of the show. And my agent was like, you need to work with this guy. He's really hot. His name is Ed Berger. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll, you know, and it was so funny because my husband and I were just watching All Quiet on the Western Front, the new one. And it is like mind-blowingly brilliant. And I'm like, who directed this? And it was Ed Berger. And I was like, oh, my. Yeah. Like that first episode of season one, if you only watch one, I don't even think I'm in it. I think I come in the second one, but it is like one of the coolest sequences. There's a hit and run and
yeah.
it's just so well shot, so cool, so like moody, interesting. So that was the appeal and that it was a limited series. So, you know, if you're not happy, you can move on, but then by the time we were done with season one, we were all hoping Brian would do more if they wanted us to, which there was a lot of buzz on the set that they did. Showtime was really happy with it. And that if in fact they could get him to come back, they'd probably want to do more, but it was always up to whether Brian, felt like doing more and if they could come up with a storyline that he felt like was worth coming back for. So that took a couple of years. He was very busy. He was doing, you know, 1,000 things. And, I mean, in the meantime, I did a pilot and a couple movies. I didn't even know if it was for sure going to happen again. And then last July, they said, we're a go. We have scripts. We have Brian. Do you want to come back? I'm in 7 out of 10, so I'm not in every episode, but, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to see what happens next. And then this year they brought in Rosie Perez as sort of my superior. She's comes from the outside and really stirs things up. And, she's a real hero of mine. Growing up, Fearless is one of my favorite movies and her performance in it is one of the best things I've ever seen. So I was very hard to be normal for a while around her, but I did get comfortable. But yeah, she's a great addition to this season. That's about to come up out in this month.
It's going to come out on streaming the 13th and then it's going to be on Showtime, like the channel itself, on the 15th.
Oh, wow. That's soon.
Yeah. You were mentioning the first episode, and I think that first episode is maybe one of the best first episodes. I was blown away.
Yeah.
That whole episode could have just been its own thing, quite honestly. Yeah.
It was COVID when it came out, so the premiere was on Zoom like this, and none of us had seen it, but we went to like a Zoom premiere. We watched it just on our computers, and I was just like, what, you know, and you're in something, you don't have any idea how it's going to get edited, what the music's going to be like, what the tone is going to feel like. Like you have a sense somewhat of like camera angles might be more unusual than normal. So that's kind of cool. Like, it's not all just like, but you don't really know until you see it all put together. And we were just all like gobsmacked. I was like, and I knew what happened in season one and I watched it. I also don't usually watch anything I'm in, but because it was COVID and there was nothing to do, like this is like early days, you know, just everyone's quarantined. So I had a group of friends and we'd watch it every week that it came out and I would be completely tense and shocked as if I didn't know exactly what was going to happen.
Right.
That's how well done it was. I was just like, I'd get sick to my stomach. I mean, it's not for everybody. My husband's on Handmaid's. That's not for everybody either. Like it's definitely an emotion. You will feel shit that you might not want to feel, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, I get you. I haven't gotten very far with it, so I'm
all right. Eager. I won't tell you what happened. Yeah.
No, I get you. I don't want to ruin it for anybody else because people have the ability now to see.
I know you can never tell. You can never spoil anything because people. I didn't watch Breaking Bad till it was all done, and I watched all 6 years at once. I watched all of Better Call Saul all at once. I sort of like to wait and do it all as a long story. I hate waiting like a year between stuff, but
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Be more of this, so I would go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'll get it. I'll tell the silly story that.
Okay.
My mom, at some point, remarried, and her new husband, who I called dad still, regardless, even though they got married when I was an adult. She was saying like, oh, well, she was over talking to, you know, I was talking with her and my sister, and she's like trying to describe what my stepdad George looks like. And she goes, you know, like he looks like that guy, Brian Whitmer. And I'm like, Brian Whitmer? I mean, is that a football player? He's like, no, he's an actor. I'm like, who the hell is Brian Whitmer? And I, you know, I just put it Brian Whitmer in the Google, and for some reason, Bradley Whitford's name came up. And I don't know how. And I'm like, do you mean Bradley Whitford?
It knew you had it wrong, and it knew.
I'm like, do you mean Bradley Whitford? She goes, yeah. I'm like, where the hell did you get Brian Whitmer from?
Well, I know what I'm going to call him tonight.
Yeah, there you go. And I said thanks, and I I'm going to admit to something. I'm going to admit to something to you, and you, I don't know if you want to tell him this too, but he was one of those people. Like when he was kind of starting out in the '90s, and he was in the Adam Sandler movies and stuff like that. Yeah. He was always a guy that I, every time I saw him on screen, I was like, oh, I hate that guy. he always plays an asshole. I'm sure, and I'm saying he plays it so well, he's gotta be an asshole in real life. And I think what turned me around is, even though it didn't last very long, and I didn't even watch all of the episodes that was on, because I know he was in the West Wing, but he was on that Sorkin show's studio on
Studio 60.
Studio 60, and I liked that show enough, and I liked him in it, that I'm like, okay, I'm going to start reconsidering. And I absolutely love him on Handmaid's Tale. So I've come around.
Well, if it's any, you know, consolation, I guess. I thought he was a dick when I met him, because he's got a swagger, which is why he's cast as that a lot. He has a way of walking and a way of talking that we sort of associate with a cocky, self-assured kind of jerk, which is why it's cast as that a lot. He is the most kind, lovely, and I'm not saying that because I'm married to him. I would
hope that's part of it.
I could not have been more wrong. Like, it was so funny. I thought, oh, my whole life, the one that is the one for me was the one where I had the wrong impression. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, oh, don't trust your first instincts. Like, because I met him on set, and I was like, he was on Transparent. That's how we met. And I was like, whatever, Bradley Whitford, you know? Like, and then he's the biggest hearted sap. He cries at the drop of a hat. I mean, he's just, and no, he never really gets cast. I play a lot of jerky people too. And I'm not saying I'm like an angel, but I it is interesting. Jay Duplass, who was my brother on Transparent, played a jerk. And he'd say in interviews, I slept with more women on that show than I have. I mean, just in the storyline, than I have in my entire life. Like, people just assume he was like a womanizer, such a sweetheart. I actually think it's kind of like, has nothing to do with it, but I think you just, you know, your manner, I don't know. I mean, I don't, it's,
well, that's where typecasting becomes a problem sometimes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember hating Philip Seymour Hoffman, mainly because I hated Philip Seymour Hoffman because of Son of a Woman. And I hated Matt Damon for like Geronimo, School Ties, and Courage Under Fire, because I thought he was just a jerk in all three.
He definitely is one of those guys that comes off as a dick, like Matt Damon.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know in real life. I'm sure he's
great. Oh, gotcha.
No, I mean his mannerisms. Like, got that, you know,
it was just like the early version, but I've since grown to like him.
It's like toxic masculinity energy, you know?
Just it's weird. It's a weird thing. It's just a vibe. It doesn't mean
right. It's a vibe.
Or sometimes the coolest seeming people are complete assholes.
Yes. And I won't name anyone, but let me tell you, that's what blows my mind. People whose entire careers are built on playing people you love can be some of the most horrible people. It's really weird.
And not to throw somebody under the bus, but I mean, I I never realized until recently how bad of a, I mean, I knew the whole situation with Community, but I never knew how bad of an impression Chevy Chase left on
people. Oh my God, he's supposed to be horrible. I don't
that know. The Christmas Vacation movie apparently was supposed to be a fucking nightmare.
Oh my God, and Bill Murray. I mean,
Bill Murray's gotten into a weird area all of a sudden.
No, he's always been the worst, and no one talked about it. And he's one of the funniest people on the planet. And you would never think that guy, I mean, you just would not think what a jerk that guy is. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, it just blows your mind. Yeah. You're like, wait, what? Like, you're funny and I love you. No.
Yeah. Well, Bill Murray's mystique also got helped a lot by him just showing up at random places and like doing dishes at a frat
party. Right. And honestly, we're all more complicated than just one thing. Like, he does do some cool stuff, and he was such a great like Cubs fan, right? Yeah. There's cool parts to him, but
it's hard for me to hate a Chicago one.
You know, I agree. But in terms of working with him, I never did. I have friends who did. It's just a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. And it's just funny. It's like, okay.
he's winding down anyway, so it's not like a big deal, but
for sure.
God, I forgot there was something else I wanted to ask you.
Still gonna love him. I don't care if he's
I have that, unless somebody's done
right, unless they've done something right, unless they're like
truly horrible. I
tried to watch a Kevin Spacey movie the other night and I couldn't do it.
Like, hard one for me.
And he just got like acquitted on something in England, but there was like far too many accusations. I know someone that I just don't trust any of it. And now he creeps me out.
Oh, that one was one of the hardest, because I had been championing Kevin Spacey since Wise Guy.
Oh, he's so good.
And it was so,
he's so, so good.
Horrifying. It's like, I mean, I always heard the rumors that he was gay, and I was like, oh, whatever, everybody says
who
that.
Cares? But who not
cares if he like is?
Prey on people.
But not, there was nothing about all of what else was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrifying. And it's weird that in the Me Too movement that there were gay men that were swept up into it too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's weird. Yeah. Have you seen the new Cate Blanchett movie, Tar?
I just did.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Oh my God. I mean, Bradley said in the middle of it, like, I quit acting.
Like, she's
so good. You're like, what? I don't even do anything. Like, what?
Every best acting job this year have been, for me, women. It's been Kate in Tar, Ana de Armas in Blonde, and Amber Midthunder in Prey, the oddly enough a Predator sequel.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's really
good. I love Anna very much. My husband worked with her and she's like, I can't watch that movie. And I love Julianne Nicholson who's in it, but I can't watch it. I just like, it freaks me out. It's too much.
Yeah.
Too dark. I can't do it.
It's pretty dark. Yeah, it's pretty dark.
And I love both of them, and you know, and I feel bad because I know she kind of got swept up in stuff that had nothing to do with her performance, because
Julianne was the character, she played her mother, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's right. Yeah. I swear I know I've seen Julianne.
She's a great actress.
I've seen her with Bradley before though.
Oh really?
Somewhere, but I thought they did something together. For some reason that's like sticking out in my head, but I can't, maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. She did that Kate Winslet.
Right.
Yeah.
Mayor of Easttown.
And then she used to be on Law and Order, which is, maybe that's where Bradley knew her. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Anyway, she's so.
My mind's all over the place.
I just want to be her in another. I want her career and I want Toni Collette. I'd take either of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Toni's with a little Julia Louis-Dreyfus sprinkled in.
Yeah, sorry, I had to put the dog down. Okay. She kept staring at me and I finally just grabbed her. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is all of a sudden going to be part of the Marvel universe now.
I saw. That's so crazy.
It's like,
those movies though, they're great to watch, but boy, you're in the middle of like some ex-army bank like hangar in somewhere in England where it's freezing and dark and it's cold and it's like, and you're acting with green screens the whole time. It's such an interesting, it's such a different experience to do than it is to watch. Like I used to be so jealous of people in those movies, and now I'm like, okay, whatever. Like I'd like them.
And you only did the scenes in a hospital room.
Right. I mean, I didn't even have to do all the fake stuff. I watched my husband do Godzilla for a long time, and that's hysterical. I mean, they're all locked in a ship with nothing there going, I mean, it's just like, it's a very strange form of acting.
Yeah, for real.
But it's great money. It's great. And it's great entertainment.
Yeah, no, for sure. I guess I'll, because I've been talking to you for a while. It's not that I don't want to talk to you. It's just I don't want to take up all your time.
And I will never shut up.
Well, I could have that problem too. But you're from here, obviously, from Chicago. You moved to LA at some point. What do you like about living in LA, and what do you miss about Chicago?
Well, it's easy to say my dad sends me Giordano's pizza twice a year. So that's.
You're a Giordano's.
I am a Giordano's. I know. Everyone's got their freaking pizza that they like.
Like,
it's like, are you Cubs or Sox?
Right.
So what are you? What's yours?
For pizza?
Yeah.
Lou Malnati's.
Oh, I love Lou Malnati's. So it's like, whatever. But I do like.
Okay, now Cubs or Sox.
But I do like Giordano's more. I am a Cubs. I was raised in the North Side.
So
I worked at Wrigley Field. Like what? I have to. Yeah.
I grew up on the South Side, so I'm Sox.
Yeah. But it's that whole thing of like, what's your pizza? But I love LA's weather, obviously. Yeah. There's no other reason. That's the whole thing. It's just beautiful outdoors. I got I really got over the Chicago winters. My stepdaughter moved from here to Chicago and loves it there. And I don't know, it's like your own personal thing, but my dad still lives there. I can't do those winters anymore.
Well, to be honest, the winters aren't nearly as bad anymore.
Well, they're not here. I mean, our bad weather this week.
No, I get you.
Everyone's like freaking out here. It's freezing. And it does feel freezing for us. It's like 50 degrees and everyone's like freaking out. And that's just never happens. And it was raining for 3 days and everyone's like,
I went to my parents' house the other day, and it was like 39 degrees, and I was wearing a t-shirt and shorts, and she goes, where the hell is your jacket? Still being a mom even at her age. And I'm like, it's like summer out there. We need the jacket.
That's so funny. Yeah, my body temperature doesn't, I'm always cold, and people are always warm, but I miss like pizza, and I miss my dad, and I miss my friends there. And I was there till my 30s. You know, I was a real, it was a lot, big part of my life. I miss Lakeshore Drive always. I loved going to Watertop Place when I was a kid. I miss, the Millennial Park and the Art Institute of Chicago. And, and here I love, I always just come up with the same thing because it's not, there's not much else to love here than the fact that it's 75 and sunny. There's great people here. There's a lot of expats from Chicago out here. There's a lot of people from New York that moved out here. There's a lot of art here, a lot of culture. Mm-hmm. I got to see the Roots play at Disney Hall on New Year's Eve.
That's cool.
It was unbelievably extraordinary. And, there's tons of cool stuff like that. And comedy, there's great comedy shows out here. Mm-hmm. And hiking and nature. So that's, we were in the desert hot springs. It takes like 2 hours and you're on another planet in Joshua Tree. So I like the hills and the mountains. But I'll always consider myself a Chicagoan.
I get that. I'm actually, I'm narrowing in on finally, I've spent a little bit of time in Los Angeles. I was on a brief layover from Vegas to LAX to back to O'Hare 1 year. So that's the most I've ever spent in LA.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So I'm actually planning.
You need to come. I'm, you do all I'm this like entertainment stuff. You need to come.
I'm dying to go see all the classic movie theaters that you guys have. I mean, not to be predictable, but I really want to go to the New Beverly.
Right.
There's a bunch of, like, I want to see ground, I want to go to the Chinese theater just to see.
Chinese theater is cool. I went and saw RRR there recently
with
the director. It was insane. I mean, yeah, that place is a lot of fun with the right movie.
Yeah. I really wish when I go that the Cinerama Dome would be open, but I don't think that's going to be open by the time when I go, because that's still in.
You should also go to like Hollywood Bowl. Sometimes they show movies there and sing along. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be coming in March. I don't think we'll be doing those yet. Maybe.
It's warm here.
No, I know, but still, again, people might still consider March cold. So.
I guess. Yeah, that's true. I guess it's probably more.
Yeah, so I want to go do that, and there, I used to write about the food business here in Chicago, so there's a ton of places. A couple of chefs I know have places out there now.
We went to Odeum, which is a restaurant next to the Broad, where Disney is, and it's a really great little nook of museums, art, and that restaurant is off the chain. So I highly recommend adding it to your list.
Odeum. Okay.
Odeum with a T. Otium.
Oh, I haven't heard. I mean, I've been trying to kind of pay attention. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, I'll recommend because she's got one here. Now she's got one in LA, is Girl and the Goat, the Stephanie Iser.
Oh, that there's one here now. I've heard about it. I never went in Chicago, but yeah. I've heard plenty about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's, you gotta check that out because that's always fun.
Girl in the Goat.
Probably impossible to get a seat there, but I'm sure maybe you guys could figure out a way.
Yeah, you never know. I always the funny joke is like Bradley's one of those actors, like either people are obsessed and you get a table immediately, or maybe they just somehow missed everything he was in. Like he's just in that weird, but we're always like, take off your hat, honey, take off your hat. Cause if he's wearing a hat, it doesn't work. They have to see like the whole high forehead.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's then, funny. Then you might, we went to Nobu in New York and it was packed. We had no reservation. Like there's not a chance in hell.
Yeah.
And his magic worked. So.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah. We got one of those in Chicago now, but I've heard it's just kind of eh.
It's really good out here, but yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. There's great sushi. And
it's hard to know. Cause it's like, we've got a lot of those sushi places down to the high end ones here in Chicago. So, I have no idea. But I love, in fact, I'm going to do a whole tasting thing at one of the Let Us Entertain You places next week, which I'm very excited about.
Richard Melman, is that?
Yeah. I got to meet him once. I got to go into the Let Us Test Kitchen too.
I think I worked for that. I think I worked in Water Tower Place for a Let Us Entertain You restaurant.
Well, there's been so many.
DB Kaplan's, which closed. It was a deli with like this really extensive menu, and that was a Let Us Entertain You.
Oh, it's been a while. I remember Steve Dahl's place with Melman Hat Dance.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and then Gary Meyer used to have the other one a couple blocks later, which wasn't Melman related, but yeah, it's
blast from the past.
I know all those people from.
Well, I hope you have a great time out here, and thanks for inviting me to chat.
Yeah, no, thank you as well. It was a real pleasure, and good luck with everything. And tell Bradley that he and I are good.
Brian, what's his last
name? Brian Whitmer.
Whitmer.
Yeah.
Whitmer. I'll tell Brian Whitmer, you say hi. Brian Whitmer, your mom says hi.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Amy. Again, Your Honors premiere is streaming 13th of January and 15th for Showtime only.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you very much.
Check out Missing.
Oh, and Missing as well is coming out soon. Yeah, check that out too. All right. Well, hopefully we get to chat again sometime.
Be fun.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. Bye.
All right, bye.